This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, football,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, good to be with you. Into the 7 o'clock hour we go. I'm Sean Pendergast. He is Seth Payne. We had Mike Thoman on yesterday, the new team president for the Houston Texans. Been in the job for better part of a month or so. Why are you making that? Why are you gritting your teeth like that right now?
We can talk about it at the end of the segment.
Okay.
It's related to Josh Allen and Bill Belichick. And Bill Belichick's current love status
okay. Has
really just creeped me out.
Make a note, because the end of this segment is 34 minutes from now.
I'm sure to remember this. Hold on a second. Let me put it in the show prep.
There you
okay.
Go. We're good. All right. So we have Mike Thoman. Did you enjoy Mike Thoman yesterday?
I did. Yeah. I did. He's very likable. I've watched multiple interviews with him since we've learned that he was the Texans' new president, and then also with Mark and John on Texans All Access the other day. So, he's the opposite of a suit who sounds like the magical, what's his name?
The Magnificent Gladstone.
The Magnificent Gladstone. The GM of the Jaguars who tries to throw out a buzzword like three times per sentence.
Yes.
I feel like Mike Thoman is the opposite. He knows all those buzzwords and he probably thinks in a lot of the same ways as Gladstone, but he knows how to talk like a human being.
Yes.
So I like that.
I do too.
I like human beings.
I'm a big fan of the humans. Absolutely. So here is Mike Thoman yesterday. Obviously the big thing that Texan fans are wondering about, especially with the change in team presidents and with Mike Thoman's background in stadiums where he's worked both on the team side, with some teams. That was back in the day with ticketing, sponsorships, on the business side with some basketball teams in the NBA. And then on the other side, working with teams as his clients for the last decade or so. And it was very stadium centric. A lot of the work that he did, both in renovating existing stadiums, new stadiums, the fan experience there is huge, as you're going to hear right here. Here is Mike Thoman, new team president for the Texans, on the team's current stadium situation.
Just to set the table, we're 7 years out at this stage. And so we have started a process like you would for any major transformative opportunity that you have coming down the line. The key is to get out in front. And I was really enthused to understand all the great work that had already been done with our partners at the park, trying to understand how we could renovate. You know, our priority, our focus has been renovation, and it continues to be. We're open to all options. You have to consider all options, but where our energy continues to be is figuring out how do we make NRG Stadium a world-class stadium, the best competitive advantage for our team and the best experience for our fans. And so we're going through the process right now. You know, we've commissioned a number of studies. We have a number of experts helping us. Some of them still have to come to conclusion, and we have a lot of dialogue to continue on that front. So there's no April 15th we need to be at this point. What I can say is we're in a great position for a runway to make sure we're making the right decision and the right approach.
So I think the biggest thing that I will probably keep saying on here, because we learned yesterday that some of our listeners had been misled by a very irresponsible article that was aggregated and made with a lot of headlines that made it look like the Texans were considering leaving Houston. That's 100% false. That if there's any kind of drama here, it's not going to be about whether the Texans are leaving Houston. It's A, whether they're going to renovate the current stadium or build a new one. And then the drama becomes, there's 12 counties in the Houston area. Mm-hmm. If the Texans are going to build a new stadium, is it going to be at NRG Park, or is it going to be somewhere else in Harris County, somewhere in Montgomery County, Fort Bend County? The whichever one of those maybe gives you the most enticing plot of land and other benefits to go along with it, that's where it'll get interesting. But at no point do I expect it to become, oh, the Texans are going to go to some other city. There's almost a 0% chance of that happening.
No, yeah. Especially when you consider the circumstances under which the team was born. With the late Bob McNair bringing football back to Houston because he felt football belonged in Houston. And you're sure there's a business venture side to it. You don't start up a business without the idea of making money doing it. You don't get the amount of money that Bob McNair had to pay the expansion fee without being a businessman. But I believe him from what he was saying back in the day that his big motivation was to bring football back to Houston. So I think the last thing that I would expect to happen would be for his heirs to move it out of Houston. That would make no sense. As far as you bring up a good point, Seth, about where this thing might go if you had to do a new stadium. I brought this up yesterday at the end of the show during the toss with Reggie and with John Lopez about what would the hardest thing be to do with respect to NRG Stadium in order to get it up to what Mike Tolman's vision of it is for the fan experience.
Yeah.
And John brought up, he thought the hardest thing to do would be the stuff surrounding the stadium, whether it's traffic flow or, the experience outside NRG Stadium. I talked to a couple people yesterday that are well-versed in stadium-type stuff like this.
Ooh.
My feeling had been, my answer was going to be with John, that things like the field level suites that you see at a lot of the new stadiums, right?
Yeah.
The ones that are really experiential, where the players are coming up to you before the game and interacting with your suite, things like that, that would be the hardest part. It's the what I learned was like the premium spaces would be the hardest thing about reconfiguring NRG Stadium. Like when NRG Stadium was built back in 2000, the big touch points were retractable roofs and the modularity of the playing surface and things like that. Things that were more game day operational type of stuff. It's totally shifted now to where it's the thing. You're competing with television. You're competing with staying at home and watching games. So yeah. Now it's all about the fan experience. So premium spaces, field level suites, having suites that actually cater to various pricing tiers where there's actual suites that are maybe, somewhat
closer
more...
Some are more
affordable than others,
yeah. They've started that a little bit with those Lux suites, haven't they? Because those Lux suites are on the 100 level, and they're closer to the field.
Yep.
I can remember as a young football player when I was injured and I got to go sit in a suite for the first time. First time in my life sitting in a fancy seat at a football stadium and thinking, wow, people pay a whole lot of money to sit pretty far away from the field. Like, I don't understand why those seats down three rows up are so much cheaper than where we're sitting just because I've got my own bathroom and a waiter. That's cool. I like the waiter and everything, but I also like being really close to the action.
Yeah. And it's just going to be really hard to reconfigure the stadium. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm not an engineer. I have no idea. But it's to reconfigure the stadium and rejigger the stadium. We're talking about levels of suites at field level and at various levels throughout the stadium is really difficult. And you asked about this yesterday on the show, which was the relationship with the rodeo. And there's no other NFL team that has that level of partnership with another entity that the Texans do with the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo.
Especially when you talk about being able to generate revenue and what you can do with your property and your real estate. There's times, obviously, where the Texans can't do a single thing with their stadium. The stadium that they co-lease with the rodeo because they're co-tenants.
Yeah.
You ever been a co-tenant with somebody, Sean? You ever had to try to collect rent from your D-bag roommate or whatever? Not that either of these entities are D-bags. It's just always there's something. You ever co-owned property with somebody? Like owned it?
No.
Oh, it's the worst living nightmare I imagine.
Really?
It can be at least. Yeah.
Sounds like you've been through this before.
I don't want to talk about it.
Okay. The what's interesting too, the other thing that was brought up to me about the rodeo is in terms of the stadium experience, is just the difference in the type of fan that goes to each of those events. Whereas the rodeo, this was really interesting. Whereas the rodeo, I think, likes fans to be like standing up throughout the concert and, you know, standing like congregating in certain areas of the stadium that are very different than how football fans consume the in-stadium experience. You know,
okay.
And how you build the seating structure and the, like, it's just, it's two different types of audiences.
My early projection on this is if I had to gamble on it, I think there's a better than 50% chance. This is purely my speculation.
Pure Seth Kane speculation.
I don't think the Texans even have a feel for this yet, but I just know that there are a lot of burgeoning, growing rapidly surrounding counties that might be competing to give the Texans the best package. And
especially if they start winning at a high level.
Public money or whatever else like that.
Yeah.
Especially if you're trying to grow and you're in for, you know, you're Katy or you're down in Brazoria County or the Galveston County, that you just, you want, you can, because I can say this from having played in Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times the economic arguments that teams make for why it can be a boost to the economy or what have you, it just doesn't always really ring true or doesn't feel right. I think when it came to Jacksonville, I think it put a stamp of authenticity on Jacksonville that they never would have had without an NFL team.
Yep.
And I think there's a lot of growing counties out there that could really kind of capture the enthusiasm and the growth element that they'd be more willing to give up than the stuff than Harris County. So I think my early bet is that 7 years from now, the Texans are either building a stadium or already playing in a stadium in one of the outlying counties.
That'd be exciting for sure. It'd be exciting, but who knows what the saga looks like to arrive there. You know, I mean, that's the big thing. Like, what, you know, how much broken glass is there to arrive at that? It's going to be really interesting, man. Like, I have no, like, working knowledge of what it's like to remodel a stadium like that. It's just, like, I see what SoFi looks like. Like, the things Mike Tolman was saying and the stadiums he's been involved with, Jerry World, SoFi, he brought up Las Vegas as a stadium that's a state-of-the-art stadium. Yesterday, I believe, whether he brought it up or not, it is a state-of-the-art stadium. I have a hard time envisioning in my mind NRG Stadium being able to get modulared into a place that looks like one of those places, you know, with the field-level suites. So
they need to open this up. If it ever does get to the point where different counties are competing for the Texans' attention, mm-hmm. that it needs to be streamed publicly.
Oh, yeah,
you gotta get your most charismatic Chamber of Commerce member to get up and make a speech both to the citizens of your county but also the Houston Texans for why they need to be there.
We
need to live stream it on Sports Radio 610.
And we need to eliminate counties once a week via bachelor rose ceremonies.
We'll do it like a reality TV show.
Yes. Yeah, we need to have Cal and Hannah up there and they'd be like, Brazoria County, do you accept this rose? And then the commissioner of Brazoria County comes up, takes the rose and says, thank you. Hugs Hannah and Cal, and then goes and stands with his or her rose.
And all holla.
Yeah. At the very end. Yes.
Have Nolan Ryan get up at some point.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. You got to have celebrity representation from each county. I like that. All right. We got to workshop this thing. Text message. Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text page. I'll never understand field level suites where you can't actually see the game. That's an interesting thought. I've thought the same thing. And yet, it feels like it'd be a pretty badass experience to be there down low. You're in the suite. Look, let's be honest. A lot of times when you're in a suite, you're not watching the game on the field as intently as when you're sitting in regular stadium seats.
But as a fan, because I've already told you the way I feel about some of the seating, I like watching the game, mm-hmm. and I don't like people talking to me during the game.
Yep.
I've never understood those field level ones either, especially those bunker suites in Dallas, where you might as well be Hitler committing suicide with his girlfriend as an actual fan of an NFL team, which is pretty much the way I feel about Dallas residents.
Right.
So, I have zero interest in the bunker suites. My favorite seat in all of sports that I'd like to sit at someday are some of those seats like they have at Dodger Stadium, where you're there on field level, mm-hmm. with just a net between you and everything.
Yeah.
There's not even a wall. Like, you're right there on the field. That's right. Really cool.
Yes.
I'd love to do that. Baseball's different. Like, I'd love to be right there at field level. Football from field level kind of sucks. As a football player, more times than not, you're watching the big screen because you can see more, or you're trying to get down in the end zone because from field level it's easier to see stuff there. It's just not the same at field level.
The one place I have not been in the Houston sports venues that I would love to go to is that suite out in center field with the Astros at field level.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's Mattress Mack's suite or not. I know he's had people in that suite before. Like he's had that suite for certain games. I don't know if that's his or not. That would just be really cool to be out, you know, just kind of, again, to your point about football, the view from the standpoint of being able to watch the game would be terrible.
Right.
I would imagine they have TVs in there if you really want to watch the game. But just being at field level in center field for a game would be a bucket list thing for me to check.
In terms of football and what it matters, the thing isn't whether I, Seth Payne, enjoy watching from a bunker suite. It's that are there enough people that want to pay a big amount of money to be in the bunker suite?
Yeah.
And there are. So it's. I'm not saying that it's not a good idea from a business standpoint. It's just that I personally don't like it.
There's plenty of the other type of people out there, to your point. No doubt about that. But we're getting a lot of people fired up about this topic. When Bud Adams took the Oilers to Nashville, this is a text, the problem was premium suites. How is that still the problem almost 30 years later? What I would tell you is I think the definition of premium suites in 1995 is different than the definition of premium suites in 2025. Like it's the phrase, the term, the actuality of premium suites, like everything over time, evolves into a more immersive, better experience.
Hey, why? How come the Mercedes the S500 from 2002 isn't flying off the shelves right now?
Yeah.
Because people change and the tastes change and everything else. There's just it's shifting constantly.
Yeah, like so just look at houses. Like a house built now, like a luxury house built now, is different than what defined luxury back in 1995. Like that's the thing.
I've got all this damn shiplap. Damn it.
Right.
Just like, are we sure we want to live with this for the next 30? Oh, yeah, it'll always be in style.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Right. Damn it. 10 years from now, I know. We'll be yanking that shiplap out.
Someone says build
plank
on
by plank.
Build on the Astrodome site. Okay, that's a whole nother ball of wax. That's a whole nother topic. Build on the Astrodome. That would involve knocking down the Astrodome, which we know is a very polarizing topic.
The one thing that I've seen in a lot of these other cities, like LA, like SoFi Stadium, I love the pavilion concept because it makes it feel like you're outside, but you're still protected from the sun.
Yep.
I don't think that works in Houston's climate. It's got to be strictly indoors.
It's indoors, yeah.
You still want to. Now, I think that what they do in Minnesota is you create an outdoor-like environment. It's just with huge glass walls. So I could see them doing something like that. Doesn't feel like you're inside necessarily.
Do the walls open in Minnesota?
They have a climate where it would make sense. It just so rarely makes sense in Houston.
I think it could be by November or something like that. I don't want to mess with it, man. To have the option, I think, would be okay, depending on how much it costs, like anything, you know?
The problem with the roof in Houston, aside from the fact that this is the problem, is it's very polarizing in that where the sun shines, those people are miserable.
Mm-hmm.
But then for where the sun doesn't shine, it doesn't actually do all that much for you.
Yeah.
It's like when you're a kid and you're like, ooh, a sunroof. Wow, that must be for the rich folks. And then you drive in a car that has a sunroof and you're like, oh, like, all right, that's cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Amazing.
It's nice, but it's nothing special or anything.
Yeah.
It's like a little glimpse of the sky and not much more than that. It doesn't make it feel like you're outside.
Text message, our stadium is better than half the league. Why do we need a new one? Sir, I think you're just saying that right now, that it's better than name the half that it's, you know, if someone's going to say NRG Stadium is better than half the league, I need them to list the power rankings of the game day experience.
Right, based on the stadium. I think there's a big portion, especially of people who listen to our show that are more hardcore sports fans who probably are just fine with whatever stadium.
That's a good point.
And, you know, like I went to that Bills game a few years ago. That's an old stadium. They're rebuilding that. Look, it comes down to, really, it's money. And how much can they create an environment where there's more enticing environments that people are willing to pay more money for? I think that some of the things that Mike Thoman said were true. Some of those things are things that you wouldn't even consciously realize, that it improves the game day experience just because it's easier to get in and everything. But a lot of that is stuff that appeals to that when you're trying to get that extra 25% of people in the door,
yep,
or make it more enjoyable for the people who aren't going to go to a Texans game no matter what.
Someone says that we in Houston are climate control fans. Yeah. I think that's a fair assessment of us. Yeah, we love our air conditioning for sure. Love
I, for the life of me, I don't know how the hell this place was ever settled.
I know. I think the same thing.
You drive me. You walk me from Tennessee in my buckskin coat and pants to Houston. But all of a sudden, man, if I'm Sam Houston, I would have been on the western border of Tennessee drinking myself to death with twice as much whiskey as Sam Houston drank, which is a lot.
And anytime there's some sort of Hollywood production, Seth, that depicts Houston or Texas or the settling of it or the old west, and there's a saloon, I'm like, that saloon smells so bad. So, like, those people are so sweaty in there right now and stinky and smelly. There's no candles in that place right now. Nobody rubbing lotion on their bodies to smell good, man. All right, Payne and Pendergast. We'll circle back to this a little later in the show. Boy, the stadium topic gets people going, man. Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line, 713-572-4610. Todd McShay, draft analyst, worked at ESPN for a number of years. Now he does stuff, I believe, for The Ringer. He's got his own show, The Todd McShay Show. I've always enjoyed his work. He was at the Combine. He's very good. His superhero power, Seth, is getting nuggets that I assume are true from people who were in the meetings with some of these players, you know, that got, you know, this was my impression of this guy, this is what I thought about that guy. Tyler Booker is getting rave reviews from people at the Combine. Here, Tyler Booker, guard from Alabama, who, if you go to Drew Doherty of the Texans does his mock draft roundup. The latest one has 45 mock drafts in it. The most drafted player to the Texans is Tyler Booker, who's drafted to them 9 times out of those 45. It's looking like he might go earlier than 25 right now. If they want him, they might have to move up. Here's Todd McShay on what he's hearing about Tyler Booker.
When you hear he's going to go higher than you think, they're like, I'm telling you something right now. Whether we're going to, or I know of other, this guy's going high. Tyler Booker, guard, Alabama. And the awesome. same sentiments. Best interview we had here at the Combine, maybe the highest football character of any player in this draft. The general manager that drafts Tyler Booker knows that they're going to get one of the elite guards in the NFL for a decade. And when they put in that pick, they're probably going to get booed. People aren't going to be excited about it. There's going to be all sorts of sports talk radio about it. And they're going to have to endure that. But they're also going to sleep like babies.
Right,
Thursday night of the draft, getting ready for Friday, because they know they just got a starter who's going to be a great player and is going to bring that kind of level of attention to detail and team leadership that you look for in your locker room.
You got a look on your face at the exact same time I got a look on my face from that.
Yeah, this notion that people are going to boo this or somehow dislike it. This is what happens this is what happens in NFL media this time of year. Mm-hmm. They're stuck in their combine bunker. And because Tyler Booker didn't have a good workout, I think these guys, the NFL media is desperate to make you believe that people care more about the combine and a lot of the draft scuttlebutt and follow it as closely than the vast majority of people do. Tyler Booker's a good football player. He's a really good prospect. He's an offensive guard. The measurables shouldn't scare you off as much as if it was a defensive end or an offensive tackle even. There's a lot of really fundamentally sound foundational stuff that makes him a good prospect. And he's been talked about this entire time as a guy who's a mid-first round pick. By the time the 2 months of all of this other discussion about guys like Todd McShay are going to be saying these same things about Tyler Booker for the next 2 months. I think whichever team takes Tyler Booker, the fan base is going to be very happy.
I think so too. Now, I guess, you know, depending on what is driving McShay to think that whatever fan base drafts Tyler Booker is going to boo. I do think there is, with the average NFL fan, I do think, maybe I'm being unfair here, but I think with the average NFL fan, I do think that there is an appetite for a sizzlier position than guard with a first-round pick, that they like people like the shiny toys, like wide receivers, cornerbacks, guys that play. The more you play a position that has the ball in their hands at some point, or go and get people that have the ball in their hands, the sexier position it is. So I do think in general, if you told a fan base you're going to draft a guard in the first round, they'd be like, oh, okay, it's kind of a letdown. I don't think the Texans are that fan base. I think the Texans, I think by and large, anytime we bring up Tyler Booker's name with our listeners here and we get reaction to it on the text page, people realize the acute need. I mean, watch the Texans last year. Guard is a need on this football, a heavy need on this football team.
The only thing
right
that I really honestly think that by and large, I think most NFL fans have, I don't want to say they've gotten smarter necessarily, because that would imply that they used to be stupid.
Yeah.
But I think they're more dialed in on the importance of every position on the field. And a lot of the old cliches about this or that. Now, what they do get upset about is if you take a guard when a big name guy who's in an enticing position of need is still available.
Yeah.
So that's where it goes to a team by team thing.
Sure.
But if you're a team like the Texans, for instance, our fan base would be ecstatic over a guard.
No doubt.
Or over Tyler Booker. I don't think that's just the hardcore fans. I think that's people that have watched this team struggle to run the football on first and second down. People who understand how hard it is to play quarterback when you're under pressure all the time and throwing from second and 10 and third and 12. I think our fan base would be ecstatic with a guard. Any of the guys, unless it's a complete flyer of a guy or something. I think there's multiple fan bases like that out there.
Yeah, yeah. As far as what he had to say about Booker, it's really exciting if you feel like he's going to be there at 25 and the Texans want the guy. Everything you're hearing about him, Seth, feels like he's got a Will Anderson vibe to him. He himself brought up Will Anderson. Booker did in his combine interview, his combine media session, as a guy who he patterns his leadership style after. So that's, that part's exciting if he's there at 25.
There's so much positive press on him that I don't think he's... I think there's just going to be some team that looks at the combination of skill and then character and everything else. And he's probably hit it out of the park with a bunch of interviews. That's going to be... That'll be the tiebreaker with a lot of other types of players that maybe are more athletically gifted. I'm very skeptical to be there at 25, just given all these things that we've been hearing about him.
Yep. All right. I'm going to give you a choice here, Seth.
I'll go real quick.
Yeah.
Like Shamar Stewart would be another one from the Aggies, defensive end from the Aggies.
Yep.
He had a monster combine workout, but he's a guy that the production doesn't match, so you're taking a little bit of a flyer. I think there's more fan bases that would get excited about Tyler Booker at this point, who right now he's like the average of going ninth in in mock drafts.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, wait, no, that's not on a consensus mock draft.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
That's on the but still, no. That is that's a consensus mock draft, him going to the Saints at nine.
A guard.
So defensive end marquee position, but I think there's a lot of fan bases that would get more excited about Tyler Booker.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to give you a choice here. Do you want more McShay on Cam Ward and, well, actually more on Shedeur Sanders and how unprofessional he was in a combine interview setting?
Or I want to hear that.
You do? Or,
yes.
Or would you like Bryce Young talking about Xavier Leggett with lots of Leggett cuts afterwards? We're going to get to both.
Shedeur.
You want Shedeur? Okay, you want Shedeur.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that's our audience probably wants that too. So Todd McShay, who we just played audio of talking about Tyler Booker, he also talked to some teams that interviewed Shedeur Sanders. In particular, two top 10 teams thought that Shedeur was in his interviews with them and just really didn't care what they thought of him.
Teams in the top 10 drafting that need a quarterback. The two people that I spoke to in these positions left the meeting feeling like Shedeur Sanders was not overly concerned with what they thought of him. They had a 15-minute meeting with him, and when they were done, they both said in different ways, different words, that they did not feel like Shedeur Sanders cared all that much about what that organization thought of him.
Okay. Didn't care what they thought of him.
You know, this is an interesting one. If I were to read the transcript of that, and maybe if he had just dropped one of the doesn't care what they thought of him, couldn't that be a good thing? Does this matter about tone of voice? And I'm guessing that maybe they told that to McShay in a negative tone of voice.
They absolutely did, because it's being portrayed
and
negative.
We've heard other reports about that and everything.
Yeah.
I think this is, I could see, because there was I saw at least one report that they really liked Shedeur Sanders in the interview with him.
Cleveland.
I could see Shedeur being very polarizing, not just amongst fans, but perhaps amongst NFL people too. And depending on how old school they are or not, that there might be some that kind of like whatever they perceive that I don't care what you think of me attitude to be. I don't want a guy who's overly. I don't want some guy who's just trying to kiss my ass the whole time.
No.
I don't know.
Yeah, and just blowing smoke up your skirt. Yeah, I. This is what I think, and we'll get to some more McShay on Shadur here. In fact, let's play one more. This is McShay saying that some team said Shadur lacked professionalism and wasn't taking the interviews seriously.
A couple of the quotes that I put in there. One said that it wasn't a professional approach. One person that I talked to said, the best way I can describe it is it just wasn't a professional approach. Shadur Sanders did not take a professional approach to this interview. The other person I talked to said he wasn't taking it seriously at all. I didn't get the sense that he was taking it seriously. So when you hear it wasn't a professional approach and you hear he wasn't taking it all that seriously, that's not the interview that you're looking. It's not the response you're looking for from a potential suitor, from somewhere you plan to go play.
Okay, so here let me preface this by saying I do think that Shadur's personality, his cadence, the way he delivers his message or whatever, I could see where that would rub some old school NFL types the wrong way. Let me preface what I'm about to say with that.
Yeah.
I think there's a decent chance here that Shadur Sanders, knowing that his dad, Deion Sanders, said throughout the football season this year that Shadur and Travis ain't just going anywhere. They're going to go to teams that we want them to go to. Yeah. Now, Travis Hunter feels like there's been a little separation of church and state here with him and the Sanders family. He's kind of doing his own thing. Deion is always going to be involved with Shadur, and that comes with the package. I could see Shadur in these interviews picking and choosing the teams that he doesn't want to go to.
Yeah.
And just tanking the, not tanking the interview, but doing what they're saying, not taking it seriously. Pulling a Ted Johnson. Remember Ted tanked his workout for the Bengals back in the day because he didn't want
to
play for the Bengals?
Yeah,
he tanked his workout. Ted Johnson did. And keep in mind, right, exactly.
Ted wasn't a first round
pick. He's a second round pick. keep in mind, too, that Shadur's father, Deion Sanders, is the one who went into an interview back in the combine, back when he was getting drafted in 88 or 89, whatever that was.
Yeah.
I think it was 89. And I think it was the Giants were picking like 17th. And they sat Deion Sanders down to take a test, like a written test. And
it's a 500-word questionnaire that was bogus.
Whatever it was, they were sitting him down. And he's
500 question, yeah.
So he's like, what is this? And he's like, well, we do this with all our draft picks. And he goes, or our potential draft picks. And he says, where are you picking again? 17th. I'm out of here. I'll be long gone by the time you get there. I don't know if that's exactly what Shadur's doing, but I could totally see where this might be part of manipulating where he might. I mean, it's risky. It'd be much riskier if he didn't come from money. You know what I mean? Like, it'd be much riskier if this is taking you from being a top five pick to potentially going 25th. Shadur can withstand that.
Well, and there is that part where the guys that, you know, we saw this with Eli Manning. And the guys who have fathers who are professional athletes especially know and understand, man, environment matters a lot. Like, we have way less free will in this world, Sean, than we like to acknowledge. Mm-hmm. I think the little moments that really, really matter where you have a certain degree of free will is in choosing your environment when you can. That they're very poignant moments in your life where if you choose the right environment, you'll end up getting the best version of you. And I could totally see that being the case. It's risky for me just when you think about the long term, the way the NFL works and how somebody you're interviewing with the Packers, for instance, or with, okay, let's say the Raiders right now, or the Saints or somebody. One of those guys might be the head coach of another team a few years from now.
For sure, man.
That's where I feel like, man, I understand the strategy, and yet at the same time, are you cutting yourself off at the knees in terms of your entire career? You're going to put a bad impression in somebody's mind that could last you on through your second or third or fourth job.
They got to televise these interviews, man. I would love to watch a Shadur Sanders combine interview and see what it looks like.
That Giants questionnaire that they used to do was such BS because it took forever.
Did you
get
hit with
it? It was a psychological evaluation, mm-hmm. and it's a whole bunch of either-or questions, and you're going down through, and you're like, all right. I knew enough about psychology to know that I felt like I knew which answer you're supposed to answer to be like a football player.
Yeah.
But then I also know that sometimes they've got little ones in there that show that you're being disingenuous or whatever. So I way overthought it. But some of them are like, with free time, would you rather pick flowers or fix an automobile? Like, all right. You start to get through it, and you're like, all right, they're trying to look for alpha male types, yeah. Like super macho or whatever. So you started picking all like the most, you know, like the most alpha male. Yeah, I've been gotten 3 barroom fights last week, yeah. But I feel bad about it and all those kinds
of
things.
You can listen to one song before you die. Metallica or Taylor Swift.
Right. But it took like 45 minutes to do.
Yeah.
And this is what you're meeting with all these other teams and everything.
Did you ever find out how you did? Like, did you ever talk to anybody from the Giants later on in your career and find out how you did on that thing?
Yeah. No.
Did you
They
care?
Had like a whole database from all their players historically to where they could build a profile of, hey, our best players have answered this certain way and our crappy draft picks have drafted this
For
way.
For sure. Yeah, that's why you do it.
I got a letter from Bill Parcells.
You did?
So, before the draft.
What did it say?
It said, this shows you how primitive things were back then.
Yeah, a letter. Bill Parcells, that's how primitive they were, yeah.
Wrote me a letter from the Jets, right, at the time in 97?
97 would have been the Jets,
And he said, you know, I didn't know much about you, but I've been watching film these last couple days, and I just want to let you know we were interested.
Wow.
So... Yeah, so obviously I got the Jets and Giants mixed up.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but Bill Parcells wrote me a letter.
That's cool.
I'd ask my mom if she's got that somewhere.
Dude, yeah, she better throw
it. And it was a letter. It wasn't an email.
I know.
I didn't have an email address.
Yeah.
And it was, yeah.
That's cool. Did he sign it and everything? Like his...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't like his secretary just wrote Bill Parcells.
Wait, was it handwritten or was it typed?
It was typed, but he signed it.
He signed it.
So I'm guessing he dictated it.
And I'm guessing the thoughts were genuine. I'm guessing it's like, like it wasn't like a canned letter that he sent to.
Right. Well, no, yeah, especially because of the show. Because that was how I was as a prospect. Yeah. A lot of teams just didn't. I was coming from smaller. We hadn't had there hadn't been a player drafted out of the Ivy League in over a decade, I
think.
That's
amazing.
So it was kind of a barren wasteland at the time.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of teams that got interested in me in the like in the month leading up to the draft.
That's really cool, dude. That's like that's an awesome story. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Mock draft injection time. Seth, I have good news. A new player for the Texans. None of the old none of the Tyler Bookers or Emeka Ebukas in this one. This might be one you'll enjoy because of the position.
Ooh,
yeah.
I like enjoying things.
Yeah, we'll do that. Mock draft injection. Who are the Texans taking at 25? We'll do that coming up next.